Everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Stephen Adeboye, and I have a bonus episode for you guys. So, as I prepare for season four, I decided to look into the archives and try and find some, you know, good audio clips here and there. And I found this really good gem from the Black Bristol Show. One that I think you will enjoy. The guest in this one is with Kanye King. And she is the founder of the Mobos. So she has a lot of insights in terms of how she got started. And she has an interesting story as well as things that you will probably learn in terms of life lessons in business. And I hope you do enjoy this episode. So without further ado, let me give you the episode.
Well, Kanye King. Wasn't Kobe amazing? I feel like a big sister up here. So kind of proud to see where she is, what she's doing. So amazing.
Lynn, well, let's get into it. I'm really nervous. So I'm a big fan of you, Kanye King. I was telling my wife a story about when I first met you. I met you at Adrian Grant's Visionary Awards. And you was the first person that I froze with my words on. Then I went back home and I was like, why did I freeze? I was telling my missus. But I feel like it's because you created something for black people, which resonated really with me because of the work we're doing with the UK Black Business Show and the UK Black Business Week. So just wanted to start off with saying how much I admire you. So yeah, let's get into it. You know, we talk about turning your passion into business. First of all, before we get into that question, tell us about your journey. Tell us who you are, you know, how you came to the Mobo Awards.
Okay, so where do I start? I come from a large family of nine children, youngest girl of nine, can you believe it? My father came from Ghana, my mother came from Ireland, and they came here at the age of around about, you know, 18, at a time when there was kind of notices and windows said no Irish, no blacks, no dogs. My mother was ostracized from her family because her partner was black. So she was in this country and she had no support network at all. So we were kind of moving from bedsit to bedsit, lots of financial problems, and you know, it was like very, very bleak. You know, discrimination was rife. My father couldn't get a job, a very strong African accent, couldn't get a job. So I had to work from a very young age. You know, I kind of saw the trials and tribulations that my parents faced. And so I became very entrepreneurial at a young age. You know, I lived in Kilburn, not sure how many people, in Northwest London. Few. So like Queen's Park was my kind of babysitter. So I used to collect kind of bottles, Coke bottles. And if you were to take them back to the local cafe, you'd get 5p. And so I could spend all my time in the park, no expenditure, build up a nice little income, and I used to help pay the bills from a young age. So yeah, so that was kind of the beginning of my journey. And then I guess two things kind of shaped my destiny as a young person growing up. One was, you know, becoming a parent at a young age. I became a parent and, you know, I was basically written off, left school, not expected to achieve anything. But of course, having a child gives you more responsibilities. And I was determined not to be like a negative stereotype of a young new mother living on kind of benefits. And then the second thing, and I'm sure this has probably happened to a lot of people here, you know, I had a meeting with my careers officer, and they asked me what I wanted to do with my life, and I said I wanted to set up a business, I wanted to make a difference. And they told me because I was on free school meals, I need to be more realistic about my career options. And that if I work hard enough, I might be able to get a job in Sainsbury's, maybe become a manager one day. And I was like really kind of shocked and demotivated, but at the same time energized because I made a decision there and then that who I was destined to become was who I decided to be. So those were kind of major things that kind of shaped my life.
Amazing, fantastic. So, you know, we talk about turning your passion into a business. You know, how did you find your passion and how did you ensure it was commercially viable? And then also a follow-up question that I've been thinking, you know, you created the Mobo Awards in everyone knew about it in the time where there was no social media, there was no advertising, but everyone knew about it. How did you get the word out? How did you promote the Mobas? I know that's a good question.
Yeah. So I think from a young age, when I was a teenager, from like age of 13, I was going to clubs with my older sister, going to clubs when I shouldn't have been doing that. So the natural progression was to kind of organise my own events. And because I had no money, kind of word of mouth is the kind of best form of marketing. And so, you know, I was kind of always promoting, advertising, talking about it. And a lot of people used to turn up to our kind of events. You know, we had lots of kind of high profile people. But I was very much kind of surrounded by very talented musicians who were kind of very frustrated by the fact that their work was not kind of celebrated or being recognised in a kind of mainstream way. And in 1996, when I set up the Mobo organisation, it was kind of like a dramatic year for black culture. You know, you had, but yet all you could hear about was kind of Britpop and the Spice Girls, but yet there was kind of no mainstream recognition for the kind of music that I'd grown up listening to, you know, reggae and hip-hop. Hip-hop was seen as a fad.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I went around talking to all and sundry that basically you need to have, you know, you need to have a platform that is celebrating this music. And, you know, I didn't get any joy. You know, I was told black music won't sell. The media will never get behind an event like this. It was too risky. You know, so many different reasons I was told why it would never work. And so I had to kind of shut out all that noise. And in the end, I thought, you know what? If I believe in this so much, I need to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
You know? And against my mother's advice, because my mother wanted me to have a safe, secure job and become a teacher, I remortgaged my home. And I basically put the money into launching the concept. Because as you, it's not like you could put it out on Instagram, or there wasn't even the internet. Hard to believe. But it's not as if you could promote it like that. So I knew I needed to have a very high profile launch event. But how do you launch something when nobody knows about it? You know, and so I decided, you know, I'm going to have like a high profile launch. I talked to many different artists and high profile people, and you know, artists were saying we need the Mobo Awards to redress this imbalance. So I remember, you know, talking to kind of the late Bernie Grant, who was an MP fighting for kind of racial equality. I talked to Bernie Grant, I talked to so many people. We had an event at Ministry of Sound on a Sunday because it was cheap. And we, you know, we generated a lot of coverage, but still that wasn't enough. And so I guess how I got about marketing and promoting the event, I think, you know, I guess your passion is about energy.
Mm.
You know, it's about energy. Doing things what excites you. And I knew, when your purpose is so strong, you know, you will do everything you can to make it happen. And I think my overwhelming desire to succeed, that is what led me to kind of raise necessary finance. And because I had a young son, I was kind of juggling many different jobs. Yes. And one of the jobs, I was kind of working at Arsenal Football Ground, at their home, at the kind of home matches. And I just kind of share a story, what happened to me, because it kind of links into some of the comments or some of what people were saying on the panel. So I was working at Arsenal Football Ground, and there was a gentleman that arrived. And he was very kind of flustered because he was meant to meet his young nephew, but because he arrived late, he couldn't find him. So I kind of took charge of the situation. At that time, I had to arrange for a Tannoy message to go out, where they could meet, at what time, and everything. Anyway, he ended up kind of meeting him, and everything was resolved. And then we got talking. So I asked him, you know, what did he do for a living? He said he was MD of LWT, which is part of the ITV network. Now, I couldn't resist telling him I had this kind of amazing idea that was going to make a major impact, and I had a kind of a big vision and a plan of what I wanted to achieve. And to be honest, he was very polite, and he was only polite because I'd helped him out, right? And it's that we talk about those building relationships. People do business with people they like. You know, I heard that kind of mentioned, and it's just really true. You know, people go to events and they network with all and sundry, but what I do, I could spend the whole time just talking to one person if I build that rapport, because I can't keep in contact with everybody, you know? So we built this rapport, and he was just very gracious, because I'd helped him out, he gave me a lot of time. And so he said to me, you know what, Kanya? If you send in your idea to me, you'll go down a number of levels, but you'll get that meeting. And the truth of the matter was, they were commissioning something very similar, you know? So I ended up following up, because lots of what people don't do is follow up.
Yeah.
You know, you get an opportunity, we're getting opportunities on a daily basis. People will have many opportunities in this room, but will they follow up? You know, and so I followed up very quickly, sent in a proposal, and, you know, I remember meeting the head of entertainment at LWT, and I was showing him all this coverage, you know, that we got, and then he said to me, oh, we're commissioning something similar. When he told me what he was commissioning, I knew the people that were involved and I knew it wasn't going to work. But it's very difficult to say that because they just think, well, yeah, you know, sour grapes. But in the end, they were so impressed by what we'd already achieved that they talked to their competitor, which was Colton at the time. And then Colton ran us up. We got a meeting. Colton said, Colton Television said, Kanya, we have good news and bad news for you. The good news is we're going to give you a television slot because we've been doing a lot of research and we realise that in London the audience is becoming so diverse and we need to have a show like yours that is going to appeal to a mainstream audience. But the bad news is we've got a little budget, sound familiar, and we need you to put the show on in 6 weeks. Yeah. Now, when you get an opportunity like that, what do you do?
Take it.
You say yes, right? You're going to make it work. I didn't know how I was going to make it work. It's not something I'd ever done before, but I knew I was going to make it work. And that's when that links to your question about passion. You know, what is your passion? What is your purpose? Why do you do what you do? And my why was very strong. I had parents who, my mother had suffered immensely. We've got a lot of ill health in our family. She'd had a lot of racial abuse. My four older sisters had ended up growing up in care. I'd spent my formative year in care. So, you know, I thought about the trials and tribulations that my parents had faced.
Yeah.
And I realized, well, you know what? I was financially secure from a young age. You know, I was financially secure. And I knew that the trials and tribulations I had were different to what my parents faced. My mother couldn't do what she, you know, she couldn't follow her dream. You know, she was trying to bring up 9 children, and my father died when I was 13. So I thought, actually, the challenges I have are different in comparison to the challenges they had. And so I thought, what reason do I have to feel that I cannot do this? I have, you know, you have so many opportunities that are given to you, and you always make it work.
Brilliant, amazing. You touched on a bit about your purpose, and I'm going to kind of bring that into the next question, but also wanted to just really talk about kind of your brand. You know, how important is it not only to launch a business but to build a brand, and how did you identify and, you know, refine your purpose and mission over the years? I know you've got Mobilized now as well. You do a lot with NHS, blood and transplant, who are here as well. How did you refine that over the years, what MOGO Awards meant, and how did you build up such a strong brand over the years?
Mm-hmm. Well, we felt that most people wholeheartedly agree that most forms of popular music have their origins in Black heritage. But largely until the inception of the kind of MOGO organization, the MOGO Awards, that wasn't celebrated or commemorated. You know, and our contribution was really important to me. You know, I grew up not reading about stories of people of colour. You know, the heroines and books were always white, and representation was important to me. And I wanted to create a platform which almost brought together, was about kind of unity, and brought together the most exciting artists in the world. And it's almost a kind of a defiance against what was happening out there. You know, so you know, for me, in terms of starting the brand, music or black origin, you know, people were a bit offended when I put black in the title. It was so blatant, you know. And I remember when we had, you know, when we had our very first show, you know, the logo was very strong and out there, you know. We weren't messing about. We were unapologetic. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, it kind of offended, because we then went out there talking about the inequalities that were out there. And that's when, you know, we were kind of demonized, really, because it was a time before social media when people didn't talk about that. So I think you've got to know who your brand, what you stand for, why you do what you do, and be consistent. And even if I look back at our magazine in 1996, and I see our purpose is exactly the same as it is today. All what's happened is it's evolved.
Yeah.
It's become a movement of black opportunities. That's what it's come. So for us, we, you know, created a strong logo. You know, our logo was very strong. MOBO, four letters, very memorable. You know, we thought we're going to be very consistent with our branding. And in the beginning, people were like, I remember what, you know what I mean? It took a while before people understood what the brand is and kind of what it means. And I think you have to consistently do good work. And I think from us in the beginning, there were also so many different stereotypes attached to kind of black music and culture. There was a lot of negative coverage in the media all the time. So we had to change that negative narrative and create a positive story. And the story we tell about ourselves is very important. You know, so it's kind of perpetuating, marketing our story. What is your story? What is your purpose? How are you consistent? You know, and that's how we kind of built our brand.
Fantastic. And I know you mentioned about, you know, a lot of people work, because you was just unapologetic with everything you've done with the logo. So even our team, we've got a team of eight, and you know, our team, they come on with headscarves in our morning meeting. Something you wouldn't do if you're, you know, in a white organisation. So you know, we're really just, you know, unapologetic in everything we do, and especially with the UK Black Business Show, we still get messages, you know, why for black people, you know. Right, this is racist. I remember getting an email on Christmas Day saying, this is racist. I'm like, haven't you got anything, you know? yeah, so it's just like, I know you're probably still getting as well.
I mean,
so.
We, you know, we hear things like, well, what about a show, new music of white origin? It's like, hello. There's many of those shows.
Brilliant. Who's your favourite artist?
Oh, what was
that? That was a trick one. That wasn't in the questions.
I saw a reaction. That's like asking me to pick my favourite child. Do you know what? There's so many artists I've met over the years, and often it's the ones who've been grafting for many, many years.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember I was very fortunate to be invited to a kind of party, a birthday party for Stevie Wonder. And, you know, I remember thinking, wow, you know, when I arrived, it was just like a small group of us. And then, you know, he decided where we were going to have, we went for something to eat. And, you know, what was amazing, when he arrived, everyone started to applaud, and rightly so. And then, you know, we were just chatting, having a really good time. And then the next day he rang me up. And I don't recognise his voice because he put on an English accent.
Yeah.
You know, it was so funny. Connie, what are you doing tomorrow? It was like that type of thing. And he basically was inviting me in London to hear music, to go and listen to some great music. So we ended up going to a place called, it was Pizza Pomodoro in Bayshore Place. I don't know if anyone's ever been there. You go down a basement and there's lots of phenomenal music. And he was just so humble. The fact that he was still passionate about music, he was still excited. And he was asking me, you know, what type of artist, what's the kind of latest, what the kind of music you're into. Yeah. He just took interest, so much interest in me. And, you know, I've always been a fan of his music. Who isn't a fan? Yeah. But I became an even bigger fan of the person, you know. And over the years, you know, I've met a lot of assholes. For sure, trust me, I have. But you know, I've also met a lot of incredible talent, phenomenal talent. You know, and I remember bumping into Sade at a reggae festival and just talking to her about MOBA and what we're doing, and we wrote to her, and she ended up coming out of retirement to perform at the MOBA Awards. And that was, you know, she just wasn't doing that. So I think when you connect with people in the right way and they see what you're doing, they see that you're consistent, people go out of their way to kind of join you, want to be part of your vision.
Amazing, amazing. And I remember when you've had Beyonce,
oh, yeah.
You've had Jay-Z, right?
Yeah.
How did you get here? You know, I know now, but back then, how did you manage to bring them down to the UK?
Yeah, I remember, you know, the Americans never used to fly here,
yeah.
You know, driving to the UK. It was like on another planet. But I think in the beginning, right, we used to, you know, when we were dealing with the kind of some people in the music industry, you know, we would be telling them about the MOBA Awards and, you know, we'd tell them about the artists we want to book. And they'd say it was in their diary, and then we'd go and we'd bump into sometimes the artists, and you'd talk to them about it, and they didn't know nothing about it. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. So in the end, we had to bypass some of the gatekeepers and go directly to the artists, and then that ostracizes even more. So, I mean, what was unbelievable is, you know, I knew there were people who wanted to get rid of us, because in the beginning, we ended up putting on a show. That first year that we put on a show had high production values. You know, it was like Lionel Richie picked up a Lifetime Achievement Award, Jazzy B picked up Outstanding Contribution to Music, even though he'd been like 10 years in the business, he talked about this being the first mainstream award that he'd ever received. So, you know, we got great acclaim, and people had low expectations in the beginning. You know, a lot of people who came and didn't want to be there, but then whilst they were there, they were like, this is incredible, high production values, even though we had little money, we're used to making a little go a long way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we do well. So I think, you know, so in the kind of beginning, a lot of people were thinking we need to get rid of her and we need to get rid of MOBA. But I didn't have the evidence. I just knew that the signs were there. You know, I used to be told all sorts of things we were told. But you know, what you've got to realize is sometimes when you're pioneering and you're a change maker, you're gonna do things that people don't like. You know, and I realized that. I thought those same people who are trying to get rid of me or booing me are the same people that are gonna be applauding you later on. You know, that's the truth. That is the truth. You know. Is so big, you know, I'm African,
yeah.
Right? You know, so my spirit is very big, and I think when you have a powerful purpose, you know, it and it's beyond commercial reasons, it has a way of propelling you forward, and I think that's what happened, you know, that's what kind of happened to us. So I went from being demonized to being demonized to tolerated and then celebrated,
yeah.
And that's been the journey.
MOBA Awards is not going anywhere. UK Black Music Show is not going anywhere. That leads me on to my next question. You spoke about some of the challenges already in your last answer. So, you know, you've often spoken about seeing obstacles as opportunities. You know, what obstacles are there for Black-owned businesses today that can be turned into opportunities?
The statistics are out there where we know, you know, after what happened with the murder of George Floyd, you know, the world woke up to the injustices faced by Black people. You know, I've been in the creative industry sector kind of my whole life, and, you know, the creative industry sector is one of the fastest growing sectors in the UK economy pre-COVID. 1 in 11 jobs was coming out of the sector, but yet the dial was not shifting quickly enough for Black people. And, you know, we needed to kind of change that, really. So I think the opportunities that were arising were based upon, you know, there were a lot of uncomfortable conversations being had. You know, when we were talking to lots of organizations, you know, they could see by the suppliers, the people that they were doing business with, there wasn't a lot of diversity, but yet they were worried about you know, they didn't end up doing anything. They were worried about talking about it, saying the wrong thing. And I think what I found, when we talked to a lot of companies, they were like happy to talk about it and say, we don't want to say the right things, we don't know what to do, how can we find black talent, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, first of all, there has to be an awareness. You know, there has to be an awareness about the inequality that exists. You know, the numbers are there, the stats are there. You know, if you're a black female, you're more likely, you know, kind of to die in childbirth. You know, in terms of the kind of company directors out there, something like 2% company directors are black. I mean, in terms of journalists and the media, you know, 94% are white, you know, just a small percentage. I mean, the numbers are out there, you know. So, first of all, there has to be an awareness, and I think there has been, you talk about what are the positives. First of all, the positives are, you know, there's been awareness. Also, you know, positives are people are starting to work together. You know, realising that nobody gets anywhere alone. You know, you need to build a community and work together to support each other, because if you collaborate, you can accelerate. And that's what we started to see. You know, in terms of a kind of, there's a lack of access to finance, but there's been a lot of organisations who've set up black networks, multicultural networks to provide support. And, you know, I've seen so many organisations. So there's access to so many tools that are out there. And I think, you know, for once in my lifetime, it's been a positive. So when the pandemic happened, you know, a lot of people were kind of paralyzed in terms of, you know, we were talking to lots of organizations and all of a sudden they were paralyzed, they stopped doing anything. But for us, we doubled down. Do you know what I mean? We were used to the pandemic, we were used to all sorts of obstacles. Because I think when you overcome many obstacles and you talk about seeing obstacles as opportunity, you build a certain resilience, right? And, you know, our resilience, you know, we had built a resilience. It was like, okay, we're used to this, do you know what I mean? This is, you know, more dramas and, you know, challenges that we need to face. But for once, we felt that the awareness about the injustices meant that a number of forward-thinking companies wanted to do something about it, you know? And for us, what was important for us is that it wasn't going to be a moment. This needs to be lasting. And how can we work together to create change and make sure that the challenges and obstacles that we had overcome wouldn't be for generations to come, you know. So, and that's why we kind of mobilise came about. A lot of people talked about it, we took action.
Brilliant, amazing. Now this is a bit, maybe a tricky question. So, you know, the first mogul was succeeded against all the odds. You know, was there ever a point where you, you know, regretted the risk you took? And how did you keep motivated and moving forward?
Yeah, I think there are always, I reframe the way I looked at challenges, first of all, you know, because in the beginning, I used to think to myself, if I worked hard enough, I'm going to become successful. And I realized that wasn't the case. So I had to change and reframe the way I looked at things. And that made all the difference. So I think when you're at the bottom of the pile, you have to learn to turn those no's into yeses. The kind of no's that those with privilege often take for granted. And so I had got used to turning kind of rejection into a positive. You know, so when people used to say to us all the time, no, we can't do this, no, we cannot give you money, no, you know, the black music or brands, or we don't want to be associated with you. I always said, I didn't see N-O. N-O, the word meant not over. So I would go away and reframe things, get some inspiration, do something differently, and come back. And I'll share a story about one of the, in the kind of very first time I was set doing the mobile awards, and I had the 6 weeks. We reached out to Tony Blair's office because we thought, as leader of the opposition, you know, maybe you might have time and you might come to our show, because it was a time when the music industry caught in politicians. And so, of course, they came back to us when we were kind of reaching out to them to try and get Tony and Sherry Blair to kind of open and be there at the very first ceremony. They said, schedule these set months in advance. And so we'd had, by this time, 17 years of a Conservative government, and he was seen as a big hope. You know, everybody was like excited about what's to come. And so I remember at the time, you know, when they said his schedule was, you know, set months in advance, he's not available, I didn't go away. I asked for permission. I said, look, do you mind if we keep in contact? Just in the small chance his, you know, his schedule might change. And I've always said that there's a fine line between being a pain and being persuasive, you know. And we kind of, you know, I juggled that really well. And so anytime we had some good news, we kind of share it with them. And then eventually they're the ones that said to us, you know what, he's rearranging his schedule, he's going to be there.
Brilliant.
And the very first ceremony, thank you. The very first ceremony. So 2 days before the show, we then went into overdrive. You know, in terms of, at that time, I'd been working from my bedroom. So when people were calling mobile organization, it was a bit like virtual is now, where you hide your kind of, the dirty laundry, and everything looks a mess and nobody needs to see, you know, when you're doing a kind of a video meeting. But then when people were ringing me up, my room was in disarray, but people didn't need to know that, so it's like mobile organization. But when obviously we got the broadcast slot, I thought we needed to find offices.
Yeah.
So I needed to find offices, I needed to assemble a team. And, you know, the very first show, you know, Tony Blair, Sherry Blair were there, and my mum jumped on him, as mums do. She was basically trying to tell him what a hard-working daughter she had, because she was trying to help get me a job. She wanted me to get a proper job. And I would say it's only in 99 when I got my MBE that she thought was royal recognition.
So I mentioned, you know, you're one of my role models. Who are the role models that have inspired you in your career?
Well, first role models were my parents, because, you know, my father, you know, he was this incredible man. What's amazing, I laugh when I think about him, because, you know, we'd go outside and play, and then I had to wash my hands about 10 times a day and cover my mouth if I cough. And how relevant is it today? You know, but yet, you know, on our screens, you know, at Christmas time, there'd be like a film about, you know, Zulu, about savages. And my father was this dignified, elegant, very articulate man, but yet that wasn't portrayed anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my parents were my biggest kind of role models. My mother, she was, even though she had, you know, 9 children, she would take in my brother's homeless friends, and she was a nurse, a home help, a cleaner. She was just incredible. So the first were kind of my parents, and then actually, I don't know if you've got a video clip, if we've still got it, of Nick. I don't know if you've got that one. Because I could, yeah, if we've got that one, because I was, you know, we basically, one of the awards we set up were called MOBO Paving the Way Awards, and it was basically about honouring trailblazers and putting a paving stone in an environment that helps shape them, with the whole idea of inspiring kind of young people to achieve their full potential. And, you know, people like, you saw Miss Dynamite, for those of you who are old enough to remember, Miss Dynamite. And Miss Dynamite asked for her paving stone to go down at Wacott School, Performing Arts School, because she said that school allowed her to see her difference as her beauty. And it's right at the front. So when kind of young people go to that school, they can see, they often say, when I go there, that's going to be me one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's our black plaque, effectively, that's what it is. And, you know, Nicola Adams, we've got this incredible speech from her, you know, because basically it's, we're honouring trailblazers, whatever sectors that they're in. And she chose for a paving stone to go next to her Olympic medal in 2020, when they got a gold, that was the only year they got this gold post box.
Yeah.
And it was meant to represent the kind of challenges that she had overcome. And what she achieved, you know, going in as being like the first female to kind of win the Olympics, you know, she was kind of, come from a very kind of poor background, and you know, her mother had no money, the sacrifices that was made. I mean, we've got King Richard, the story about Serena and Venus Williams, that's on, you know, the cinemas, But we've got our own. We've also got our own heroes here, you know, and I applaud them.
Love that. So we'll have that video of Nicola playing soon, but before that goes up, you know, what are your and your company's future plans? What, you know, I know you've announced a new date for this year.
Oh, yes. The Mobo Awards, right? Remember the 5th of December. We're back live, you know, so for an audience, that's really exciting for us, so we're kind of proud. You know, listen, we've been going. It was amazing hearing Coopy talk about 25 years, you know. I mean, a lot of businesses, they say the average lifespan is about 12 years. But 25 years, and we're not just surviving, we're thriving.
Love that.
You know, thank you. And the Mobo Group has expanded. You know, we do everything from films and premieres, and we create content, and we have campaign, and we have, you know, we have partnerships with broadcasters as well. But our latest venture, which I'm really excited about, is called Mobilize. And Mobilize, I guess the mission is twofold. One, it's meant to unite, empower, uplift us, to share opportunities. So if you go to mobilize.co and you register as talent, it doesn't cost you a penny, but it allows, we're putting opportunities, we're starting to put opportunities on the platform. So we just put 35 opportunities from NBC Universal, the kind of film companies. We've got, you know, we're starting off in the creative and tech space, and then we're broadening out. So the mission is twofold. One, to basically like-minded people, allies working together. The second is working with the most forward-thinking companies to obliterate, you know, racial inequality. So we've got jobs for the most aspirational companies out there. So we've got jobs at its heart, but the world at its fingertips. And then the other part of it is providing expert insight, advice from allies.
Fantastic. Yeah. What we're going to do, we've got Mobilize.
Ah, yes.
And Nicola Adams video.
Brilliant.
If you could get that ready. If it's not ready, I'll take one or two questions from the audience before we get it ready. Is there a mic going around? Questions? No one's answered?
Oh, we can't see.
Maybe you've got a question.
Hard to see.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Earlier, Kubi spoke about exit strategies. I just wanted to ask, are you still heavily involved in the mobiles, or do you have an exit strategy?
Yeah, I am still involved, you know, in the Mobo Group and the Mobo Awards, although I do have an exit strategy, some kind of exciting plans kind of going forward, really. I think it's important to know where you want to go. And, you know, we, I guess, evolved, the group has evolved into many different sectors. We've kind of evolved, obviously, Mobilize is like a tech platform. But we have an entertainment company, we have Mobo Productions, and we have Mobo Trust, which is a charity, and that's all about providing life-changing opportunities for, you know, black talent. So, yes, I mean, I'm looking forward to the next chapter. I guess when I started out, for me, the key was about providing value. You know, that's what it was about. You know, if you provide value and you provide a solution to a problem, you know, people will come and join you. And there was a problem, there was an inequality out there. You know, our vision was to provide a platform that would recognize a diverse range of music genres that would hopefully inspire and champion black talent who would hopefully go on to achieve sustainable success. And, you know, what we were just trying to do is, how do we provide a value? How do we create a solution to the problem that existed out there? The revenue came later, you know? And I think a lot of people spend a lot of time focusing on fundraising, and that can take a huge amount of time. We, even with Mobilize, we've not gone out there looking for money, and yet companies are offering us money. Because I think if you focus on creating a great product or a service, and you allow users to provide you with feedback, and you improve that product, then you have a kind of a business model of how you will generate revenue, then if you're consistent, you will then start generating revenue, and then what we found is kind of brands and companies came to us.
Fantastic. Amazing. Second question.
Oh,
there you are. Yeah. Thank you for sharing such a insightful story. And I just want to ask you a question, because you've already had the saying that giving up is easy. So have you ever been tempted to give up when things were hard? And how did you resist temptation? Because you're here because you resisted it once. So I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, many times, oh my gosh, many, many times I thought giving up. You know, I'll share one story that happened to us. You know, 1 year, you know, anybody who produces kind of large scale events can be very stressful because there's lots of moving parts, lots of different stakeholders that you're trying to manage and look after. And I remember, you know, we put a lot of work into producing the show 1 year, and it was an amazing success. And the after party, you know, could let our hair down and have fun. And then the next day, so I was expecting something positive coverage. The next day we got our very first front page headline. It was in a tabloid newspaper that said Mayhem at the MOBO Awards. And yeah, and it had every negative you could imagine in the paper. It talked about, you know, drugs and gun shooting and everything. And none of it had anything to do with our event. And I remember I had to think, oh my gosh, we need to find a lawyer. We need to get a lawyer on the case. So I found someone advised a lawyer that I should talk to. And even the lawyer was trying to be helpful in saying to me, Kanye, you cannot go against this media company. They're going to be getting your bins, right? You should, you know what I mean? They were just basically trying to tell me, this is going to be very, very challenging for you to take on this media conglomerate and expect to win. But I'm very stubborn, right? And I was like, listen, we have done nothing wrong. I can't ignore it. So we took legal action, and we did end up getting an apology, but the apology was on page 17, and people didn't read that. And what I didn't realize at the time was the ramifications for us. So the ramifications was, can you imagine, you're producing very many events, because we do many events, not just the MOBO Awards, but venues were up. You cannot book a venue, right? Brands did not want to be associated with us. That's, you know, your business, right? So that was really, really challenging. So I could have just given up. And I've seen many people give up over the years, because why would you want to put yourself through that? But my purpose was so powerful and so strong, and it was my biggest motivating factor. So I, you know, like most people, I felt sorry for myself. You know, sometimes it's okay to feel sorry for ourselves, right? You know, so I could feel sorry for myself, but I gave myself time. After that, it's like, Kanye, you need to get back up. You need to get back up there. And I think when your mission and your purpose is so powerful, and you surround yourself with other people, and I think this is what's really, really important, to have the support of either your family or your partner. It's, if you're not on the same page, right, it's very difficult to make your business a success, because you're going to have to make lots of sacrifices, and you have to be so focused, and it's not for everybody. So for me, having that mastermind network is so important. And one of the reasons why we created Mobilize was because it's very isolating. Being an entrepreneur, being a leader, CEO, it's very isolating. And I wanted to be with other people who felt like I felt, and we wanted to kind of support each other, because I didn't have that. I was in an industry and being that other. And I turned around and there was no one like me. And so who could I talk to? So in the end, I created my own mastermind network outside of my industry, really. So in answer to your question, yes, many times I felt like giving up. But what stops me from giving up is realizing the lack of opportunities. You know, I think back to my parents. You know, I think back to, you know, all the discrimination and racism that my father faced, you know, and I'll never give up. I thought, no way.
I hope you enjoyed that bonus episode, because I did. I was actually live watching Kanye King tell a story, hence the recording of the audio. And I learned so much from her, just her grit, her determination, you know, putting the thought process into action and making it happen with the right people. And even with diversity as well, just overcoming that and moving forwards. I think we could all learn from that story and use that story to, you know, help us get through tough times, as well as seeing what good could come out if you put good energy and good positive thoughts and action into the world. So it's very inspiring to hear from her. And, you know, I hope I tell more stories going forwards with season 4. So again, I'm looking forward to building that, you know, playlist for you guys and actually putting some good content out there for you. But the bonus episode is a great thank you to all of you who have listened in the past. Those who are listening new, welcome. And stay tuned to this journey, because there's so much to tell and so much of my story to tell as well, which I keep hearing from others that, you know, that's kind of the direction they want to, you know, hear the podcast go. So let's see how it goes with everything, because life is a journey. And like I say, it's not about the end goal, it's about the process. So let's go for it each day, one day at a time. Anyways, enough of my motivational speak. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I hope you look after each other and the people you care about. Take care.